Good afternoon. Happy Friday and end of the term. We have finished all the material for the course. And so today I was just going to review. So let's see, my thought was I prepared to summarize what we covered and then work out some problems. But if you have particular types of problems that you have more interest in, I'm happy to try to put the focus more there. So did you let me know if there's a particular type of problem that interests you? And maybe while I'm summarizing, you'll be reminded of a type that interests you. Okay, so let's see. So this course, the material that we built up, started with first order predicate logic. Okay, so we had a concept of a sentence and a predicate and propositions. So and we studied their truth tables because that was the most interesting facts about them. So truth tables. And we just consider them to be equivalent if they had equivalent truth tables. And then we built some new ones. And so the types of operations that we used were the and the or and the not. And let's see, the implies, if and only if. So these are ways that we built a new proposition from old. Within a universe, then we could work on quantification, and that was also something we spent quite a bit of time on. So there exists for all, and then the least common one, but it comes up now and then, is there exists unique. So all of this notation and whatnot, by the way, is in the back of the book, if you look at the, just inside the cover of the book. It's a good summary of all the list of notation to make sure that you remember what all of them are. Okay, let's see. So the next thing that we did, I'm not sure this is strictly chronologically, but another thing we did was I worked with sets. And there were a lot of analogies and one built off of the other. And so you could often get somewhere using thoughts appropriate to propositions and switching back and forth to sets, but they were also a bit different. And Venn diagrams played much the same role as the truth tables did. And then we had ways to combine them. So we had the intersection and the union, which were analogous to the and or. And analogous to not, we had the complement. And this again made sense only within the universe. Okay. And then the other symbols that we had were sets had containment. That's kind of a new concept that you really have with propositions. And then we had families of them. So we could take the intersection over a family, or the union over a family. We could also combine them with products or the difference. And then we had some special sets. We had the empty set, and we had the power set of a set. Okay. I guess the last thing we did most recently was we had the concept of the cardinality of the set. So it's equivalence class with respect to this notion of equivalence, I guess that you also had. So we also had the concept of equivalence between sets, that there was a bijection between them. Right? So these were some structures that we had around sets. And then the other thing that we did with sets was we built up the concept of a relation and refined that into two different ways, as equivalence relations or within the world of functions. Okay, so relations Okay, so these were R was a subset of the product. So here we made use of the product concept for sets. And then we had, as I said, the different special classes of relations. Oh, and there's some notation, relation next notation. We had the concept of X, R, Y, or equivalently, we could write X, comma, Y is in R. These are the ways that we wrote down containment in a relation. We had ways of building new relations. We had the inverse of a relation. We had the composition of a pair of relations if they have the appropriate domain and range. And in particular, we had domain and range. Right, so those are some things that we had. The next thing we did was we took and we looked at special classes of relations. As I said, there were two basic ones. So equivalence relations. Okay, and they had their three properties that you should remember. Okay, and once we had an equivalence relation, we also had a notion of the set of things that were equivalent to an object, so that X bar. And we also had the collection of all of the sets of things that are equivalent to an object, which is a set of sets, okay? Okay. And those are the equivalence classes mod R. Okay, in particular, we had a particularly nice one, e.g. ZN was an example of this. For an appropriate R. Okay, and we studied details of that particular equivalence relation. Okay, beyond equivalence relations, the other class of relations that we focused on were functions. Okay, and so those were relations that had the following property. Whenever we had an X, then there was a unique. So here's where the exist unique came up for us. Y with X comma Y in F, and we wrote F of X is equal to Y because it's unique in its notation. Okay, and so beyond functions, then we had a special class of functions. We just kept refining it. So we had bijective functions. And these have two properties, which you should remember, injective and surjective. And they also had a similar way of expressing them. It's just sort of the backward of being a function. So for all y, there exists x, exists unique x. With what we had above, same thing, x comma y in F. There we have x comma y in F, like so. Okay, so those were the main things that we built and used. But of course, the main idea was to build these things and then use them to practice and to refine our technique, our proof technique. And so proofs. And so then the main thing, of course, is the methods of proofs that ended up being used. Let's see, let me put it in. So there were methods. The first one was just a direct proof. When that works, you should use it, right? Sometimes you want to split up into cases. That's a nice thing to do. Oh, by the way, another thing to say here, reread section 1.7. That's kind of the take-home section for this class, is how to write proofs in a clean way. Okay, but anyway, so cases, the contrapositive technique, And remember that that's different from the converse, and the contrapositive is the same as you're saying the converse is not. So you have to be careful not to make that mistake. Lots of the bad proofs in the text that appeared in the homework assignment were bad because they tried to prove the converse instead of the contrapositive. Okay, the next trickier technique, which turned out to be quite powerful, but sometimes hard to figure out how to do it, was a contradiction. Because you had to figure out what the contradiction was going to be, right? And so that's often the tricky bit, but that's a pretty powerful technique. And then the final, and also very powerful technique, but again, somewhat tricky, was the induction. Okay, we had two versions of it, the principle of mathematical induction, the generalized version. Where we assumed not just the previous one, but all the previous ones. Okay, let's see. A couple other comments about proofs. Sometimes the statement of the problem, the logic of the problem, gives you a hint as to how to get started and how you might approach it. So possible hints. From the logic, if your logic has a quantifier like a for all, then you often start with suppose. And this is a good candidate for maybe a direct proof. If it starts with exists, then you're probably going to start with something like choose. Okay, and so the technique that you're probably going to use is a construction. So there you're actually going to end up doing a lot more work probably in your sketch than in the actual proof. The actual proof is going to be really quick because you're just going to pluck that example you built over and write it down, and that'll be your proof. But the hard part is going to be finding that example. All right, so that's what happens with exist. Let's see, other ones are if you have something like if and only if, which is equivalent to this double arrow, then there are two things you always have to remember, two things. Forward and backward. And similarly, if you have equal sets, then again, there are two things. You want the containment this way and the containment the other direction. So it turns into two things that you have to prove. Okay, let's see. I guess that was my summary of what we've covered in this class. So next, what I was thinking to do, as I said, was look at some example problems. I guess one other thing I wanted to say, I will be here Monday at this time in my office if you feel like stopping in. That'll be my office hours on Monday. I'll put that on the webpage, but office hours here Monday. Let's see. Oh, and the solutions to the practice problems are up, and I will put the solution to the old exam up certainly by tomorrow morning. So. I think that's it before just doing some examples. Okay, so let me just do some example problems. And again, if you have types of problems that you find are of particular interest, feel free to mention those. Otherwise, I'll just start doing some problems. Okay, so let's see. So here, let's do a computational one. So find the GCD. Say 182 and 21. Okay, so does anyone remember how you might do that? So there are basically two ways to do it. Okay, all right, I will put that in here. Okay, any? Yeah, quotient remainder, that's right. So we can use Euclid's algorithm. So Euclid's algorithm, and exactly what you said, that means you switch into this quotient and remainder. And so the setup, the way I like to set it up is 182 is equal to, and then I do the quotient and remainder. And let's see, so what is that? That's 8 times 21. Plus14, if I did my percentage correctly. Logistical details. So the exam, the information is on the web page. The exam will become available on the web page on Wednesday, and it says what time, I forget what time, and I think noon, and then it will be due 48 hours later, and you can use your notes and whatnot, just don't reach out to other people. Okay.
And we'll upload it like the midterm, right?
Yeah, you'll upload it just like the midterm. Other questions about that? Okay. All right. So then we can just continue. So this is the queue here, and this is the thing we divided by, right? This came from here, and that one came from there, and this is the R, the remainder. All right. And so then we keep going, and the way that we keep going is we now write this 21, so that the 21 comes down, and the 14 comes down. Okay, and we end up with 1 times 14, and then 7 becomes our remainder. Okay, so that's how it goes. And then we can keep going. So now the 14 comes down, and the 7 comes down, and this time there's no remainder. So we're done. And that makes this last remainder that we got, the GCD, that we were looking for. Okay, so that's the answer. Right, so that's when we do it. Does anyone remember another way to do that? It's a little bit cheating, but anyway, you could also just, if you find any way that you can to factor it, then that would also. So you could also factor. Okay, and so this first one is a 2 times, I guess it's 7, obviously, and then 13. And the second one is 3 times 7. And then you just look for the largest, the common factor. So 7 is the common factor, so that's the answer. You can do either by factoring or by using the Euclidean algorithm. Okay, any questions about that one? All right, so let's see. So there was a question about proving that something is onto. Let's see. Here's one. Yeah, let me do this. And so this one involves some other things as well, but also in particular showing that something is onto. So here's another example. Just not several parts, maybe I'll just do part of it. But the one is to prove that something is a equivalence relation. Denumerable. Ah, okay, very good. In fact, this one also asks that question. So we can do that. All right. So let's say that S is equal to the set of pairs. So it's going to be a relation. So it's going to be a set of pairs, and it's going to be a relation from R to itself. So it's going to be a set of pairs of real numbers. Okay. So this makes it a relation from R to itself. And the condition for being in this relation is that the difference is a rational number. Okay, so does everyone agree that that's at least a relation from R to itself? And therefore, we usually do not say it twice, we write the relation on R, okay? So I post solutions as soon as I get them, and the TAs write them, so I will pester the TAs to try to get that written up as soon as possible so they can be posted. Okay. All right. So one thing to add proof about this is that this is a recurrence relation. Okay, so that's A. And then B, find X, Y, and Z, real numbers with X bar equal to a Y bar but different from Z bar. So we can see what those look like. And C, show that pi bar is a denumerable. Okay. So that involves several of the things that people were asking about. All right. So okay, I'll just do this quickly so we have time to do some other ones. But let's see. But maybe I'll just sort of outline how we do this. So outline of A. Because it could take quite a while to write a full proof of things. So what do I need to prove for A?
You need to prove reflexive, symmetry, and transitive.
Exactly. Okay. So R, S, and T, just to write them all up. Okay. So the idea then for reflexive, so what does that amount to? It says that X has to be equivalent to X. And is that going to be easy?
Yeah, because you can say that x minus x equals zero, and that's
right. Exactly. That's what you say. So that's right. So since x minus x is equal to zero is a rational number. Okay, so that's going to give us that one. What about symmetric? So this is the one that involves two things for all x, y, and r. X, y, and s implies yx is an S. So this is an implied, so we have to assume something and then try to prove the other one, right? And what are we assuming? We're assuming that, it's written there in the text, thank you. So since x minus y is in Q, minus x minus y, which is equal to y minus x, is in Q, and so forth. Okay. And then transitive, so this is the one that proves three things. So for all x, y, and z in R, and we assume two things and prove a third. X comma y is in S, and y comma z is an x, but s implies that x comma z is an S. Okay. So we'll assume x minus y is in Q and y minus z is in Q. And then how do I get the conclusion that I want? Oh, that's right, I just add them up. Let me finish that and then try to figure out some of the tasks here. You just add them together. So x minus y plus y minus z, and they collapse in the middle there. So we get the x minus z is in Q, and we're done. Okay, let's see. So that's supposed to be. Where? I'm not sure. I'm not quite seeing where the question is referring to. The idea. So this is the word idea is what it's supposed to be. That R is supposed to be an A. This is supposed to be the idea of the proof. That's right. That's what that's meant. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Okay, so that's a sketch, and I don't think I'll write out the details because that would take more of our time. Okay. Unless people particularly want it. All right, and then part B, we're supposed to find examples with the equivalence class of X equal to the equivalence class of Y, but different from the equivalence class of Z. So let's try that. So B. So is it clear what that would be? What would it mean for the equivalence class of X and the equivalence class of Y to be the same? Right, they're substitutes to each other. That's right. Okay, and for this particular relation, how could I find two that have the same that are subsets of each other that give the same answer? So notice that this is a find problem, right? So this exists. So the first thing I need to do is actually find examples where they are subsets of each other, and then I could try to prove it secondly. But the first thing I need to do is find something for which that's true. For this particular relation. Actually, can anyone see something where the two would be subsets of each other, would be the same set here?
If X equals Y?
Yep, X equals Y, that will work. So e.g. X bar is equal to Y bar if X equals Y. Okay, and any others? Can anyone think of one where they're not, X and Y are not equal, but X bar and Y bar are nonetheless equal?
Maybe the case where X or Y is zero?
Yes, if one of them is zero, then what can the other one be?
I want to say a real number.
Okay, but that's actually not sufficient. We have to make sure that their difference is rational, right?
Gotcha. Yeah, so a rational number then.
That's right, any rational number. So like a half, for example. So one half would work, or any other rational number. Okay, and to prove this, we would say that we would have to say containment here. So if we have a number A is in a zero bar, then what does that tell us? That says that X minus So I guess zero minus A is in Q. So if I add a half to it, then it's still in Q. So we have that A is in a half bar, okay? So that's what goes. Does that make sense? And similarly, for the other direction. Okay, there's a similar group. Okay, so that's two that are equal. And what's one that's not equal? Yeah, okay, let me go through why those are equivalent again. So I'll expand a little bit on that proof. So if I have, so let me expand on this one. The similar is still similar, but let me expand on that one there. So I'm trying to show the inclusion and this inclusion here. And so if I have an A, which is in that equivalence class as zero, here's the definition of the equivalence class, right? It means that X comma Y is in S, and to be in S means, fold it off, but to be in X, S means that the difference is rational. Okay, so this being in zero means that the difference between a zero and A is rational. Does that much make sense? So that's what it means for little a to be in the equivalence class of zero. I'll add another step. Hopefully I'll make it clear. Zero comma A is in S. So, okay, so that adds another step. So does that bridge enough that you can see why that's true? So if this is in zero bar, that's the same as saying that zero comma A is in S, and zero comma A being in S is the same as saying the difference is in Q. Okay, so that's okay. All right. Well, if the difference is in Q, if zero minus A is in Q, well, I can add a half and it's still in Q because I can add a half to any rational number and it's still a rational number. So I add a half to it and I get something that's still in Q. Okay. So then I can keep going and I can add that red step in again, going back the other way. If zero minus A is in Q, then a half comma A is in S, right? Because that was the definition of S, is their difference was in Q. And so the difference is in Q. And so a half comma A is in S. All right, and then, so that means that A was in one half bar. Okay, and so then someone's asking, what exactly is the equivalence class again? So that's exactly this is exactly the definition of an equivalence class. The equivalence class of X bar is exactly the set of all Y, so that X comma Y is in your relation S. That's the definition of an equivalence class. Okay, let's see. Was that clarifying? Is it clear now why we have this containment at least? Okay, and the other containment I claim is similar, so you can look that one up. That's a very similar proof. Okay. Okay. So, any other questions about why those are equivalent? So those are the same. Okay. So then how would I find one that is not the same? How would I find a Z here? Yeah, good example, right? So I can take pi, like here, and that's gonna be different because it's not rational, okay? So, so a zero bar is not the same as a pi bar. Okay, so to show that things are not equal, what do I have to do? So to show that two sets are equal, I have to show containments both ways, right? But to show that they're not equal, instead of an and, it's an or, right? So I just have to show the failure of containment one direction and I'm done, okay? So let me do that. Yeah, exactly. How one is not a subset either direction, and I'm fine. Let's see. So we have pi is in pi bar, right? Since pi comma pi is in S, so this is always true because the constellation is reflexive. So we have that on that. Or we could just check it directly. The difference is zero and therefore rational. Either one proves it, okay? Right, now we want to check that pi is not in zero bar, since, okay, so if it were, that would tell us that 0 comma pi was in S. And that would tell us that 0 minus pi is rational, which is a contradiction because we know it's not. Okay, so the assumption that we assumed, which is that it was not, that it was an element was false, and so it's not an element, and we are done. Okay. Any questions about that? So that's part B. So that demonstrates that we have found things where the equivalence classes are the same. We did it either by finding two that were themselves the same, that always works, or we also found some that were different elements, but they had the same equivalence class. Okay, and then we found one which is not the same equivalence class. Okay, so then part C was actually the one two people were asking about. So let's try that. So part C, I want to show that that pi bar is denumerable. Okay, and so so the proof idea for that one let's see, so so what does it mean to be denumerable? Exactly, we need to show it's going to n. So proof idea, so we need that this set is equivalent to n, or equivalently, that there is a bijection. Okay, but we can use some tricks. We know some other things that are denumerable. And so what are some other things that we know are denumerable? And we know that cardinality is an equivalence, sorry, that equivalence is an equivalence relation. So we can prove it's equivalent to any of those and we'll be fine. So note that we also know so what are some other things we know are denumerable? So by the way, there's another name for denumerable, maybe I'll just remind you. Okay, I like one and not the other. Which one? Good, right. Z is the one that's denumerable. R is too big, right? That's the thing. That's the other thing we prove. So we know that Z is denumerable. And of course, N, that's the definition. Anything else? Why is R too big? Yeah, so we proved last time. There does not exist a map from N to R, which is onto. So the cardinality of N is not the same as the cardinality of R. This was some work. We proved it last time. Okay, so that's a bigger set, all right? But there's another one that seems bigger but isn't, okay? And that's the one that we want to use, okay? And that's the rational numbers. So the rational numbers are, in fact, denumerable, as is n cross n. So we did prove this one, and that one was a little bit surprising because n cross n looks so much bigger, but we managed to get a bijection between n and n cross n. So that one we know is denumerable. And a lot like that one, though we didn't go through it in detail, but just claimed it as a theorem, and it's a good one to remember, is that Q is also denumerable, okay? So those are the some other sets that are denumerable. And so it will be sufficient to find a bijection from pi bar to any of these. Any of those there. Oh, sorry, what is Z? Yeah, Z is a positive and a negative ones. That one's Z, it's positive and negative. And N is just the positive ones. And Q is opposed to rational. Is all the notation clear? And R is the real numbers, right? So clear what all those things are. Okay, so that's the first thing I would do is I would try to remember which things have we done, because some of these were a bit of work to figure out. So it's good to just sort of start out by remembering those. And so then you can use any one of them to get the answer that you want. All right, so which one is going to be the easiest to get a bijection with? Anyone have an idea?
Maybe N cross N.
N cross N is pretty good, but I see in the chat one that I like even better, so I'm going to use that one. Although they're actually pretty similar, but the Q turns out to be even easier, so that's the one I'm going to use. Okay. So let me try to build a map to Q, and then I need to show that that map is a bijection. All right, so how would I build a map to Q? So if I have an element X, in pi bar, what am I going to take f of x to be? Okay, so what do I know about that x? So since x is in pi bar, we know that pi comma x is in S, and so we know that pi minus x is in Q. So how am I going to get a rational number Q from my number X? So X equals pi is an example, but what I want is for every single element here, I want to give some value. So whenever I have an X, which could be pi, it could be pi minus 3, it could be pi minus a half, it could be pi plus 3/5, it's going to be something so that the difference between pi and X is a rational number, okay? And so, yeah, X is any rational number plus pi, that's correct. That's what X is. And now when I have that rational number plus pi, so for example, let's say I have f of pi plus 2/3, right? That's an element of pi bar, right? Because if I take the difference between pi and that number, I get a rational number. Okay, so that's what it is. So now, what Josh has written is correct. But what I want now to know is what f of that number might be. Okay. So this is what a typical element of x bar looks like, right? I've got pi and I've added some rational number. So the trick I'm going to do is I'm going to subtract that pi off and I'm going to be left with a rational number. So that's going to be my trick there. So let me just write that down. So this is going to be equal to 2/3. And how did I get that? That's pi plus 2/3 minus pi, of course, right? Because the pi's cancel. And so that's what I'm going to have here. I'm going to have x minus pi. Okay. And I know that's a rational number because pi minus x is rational, right? So I guess I have the opposite sign here. So in particular, that means that the negative of it is also rational. Okay. So now what I would need to do, so that's the hard work. I built my function f. What remains to do is to check that f is a bijection. Okay, so I need to show that it's onto, right? And I need to show that it is a injective. So finally, show f is a bijection. Okay, and so let's run that through. So, what are methods to show that things are bijections? How to do that? We have more than one way to do it, and sometimes one is better than another. So does anyone remember one method? Yeah, we can find the inverse, right? That's the sort of clever one that you might not think of at first. Thanks. And so find an inverse. To f, right? And then we have to show it's a right and left inverse. What would be the other way to do this? The more direct way. So often finding the inverse is the right way to go, I must say. So that's often the best way to do it. And it might be in this case. But you can also, just directly prove one-to-one and onto, and sometimes that's easier, right? So sometimes it's one and sometimes it's the other, right? Yeah, okay, so so we can prove show onto and show one-to-one. Okay, so we would have to do one of those two things, either find a bijection, either find an inverse or show each one separately. I have just very little bit of time left. So let me start with, and the inverse is faster when it works. So let's try to find an inverse, okay? So what would an inverse be? Yeah, I would just add the pi back in. No, I'm sorry. Let me just mention that when I write inverses, I really like to use a different variable because it's less confusing. Okay, so g of y will be y minus the pi. So I subtract the pi back. And then we just have to check that g composed with f of y is equal to f of g of y, that's what it means to write that little circle there. And so that's f of y minus pi, which is equal to y, because f added f pi, or did I get them backward?
Shouldn't it be y plus pi?
It should, thank you. Yeah, okay. Better. right? So then this is a plus, and then it works, okay? Good. Otherwise, I would not get the right answer. And then similarly, you have to check both directions whenever you're trying to check if things are inverse. And this time it's minus, and we get x back. So it's an inverse in both directions, and we're done. So we've shown that our map is injective and onto by using that clever approach of finding an inverse, which in this case was something we were able to do. Okay, I am out of time. I will stop the recording and stick around for questions, and then I will be back on Monday to answer questions.
Could you show a direct proof of onto?
Ah, okay, yeah, a direct proof.